This is On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with financial planner Kevin McKinley, and you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, September 25th. Get in line now with your personal finance questions by calling 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And stay tuned for some advice on your credit score, on refinancing, on saving for retirement, and on saving money with coupons. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner. He is managing member of McKinley Money LLC with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. And I am pleased to say hello to Kevin here in our Madison studios this morning. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Joy.
So did you stay up and watch that game last night?
I did.
Yeah. Well, what was your reaction to? Was that a touchdown or an interception, Kevin?
Why even have referees at all? Just let the players call their own fouls, do it on the honor system. It would be about as effective for it. And I could, the moment that signal came in, I could feel that statewide from border to border, the shock, the disappointment, the sadness that indeed the Green Bay Packers had lost the game on a very controversial call. And I think this is the kind of thing that's going to get people in the streets rallying for the referees to get back on the job.
Yeah, do you think it might speed up the process here a little bit?
Yes, it is. This is when, you know, it's God, family, and the Green Bay Packers, and not necessarily in that order here in Wisconsin. And this is the kind of thing that might really get people off the stick.
Yeah, well, we'll see. That was one game that I'm glad I didn't have to watch.
You saved 3.5 hours and you didn't feel it. They played it without you watching. That's one thing I've noticed about the games.
They
if I don't make it to the TV, they still actually play them. But
it used to be that if I didn't watch, they would win. But this time that didn't.
You must not have watched very much in the last 2 decades. So good. You keep not watching.
That's right. Well, you know, I heard that some cities in Wisconsin are way up there at the top of cities that have the best credit scores in the nation, and I guess we're pretty good in Wisconsin of keeping our credit scores at the top.
You bet. It's the Experian State of Credit Report, where they run the Vantage Scores, which is a brand of credit score for cities throughout the country. There's about 200 cities they take. Experian is one of the three main credit bureaus. Minneapolis came out on top at number one with the best Vantage score, but Madison was number two.
Pretty good.
Wausau was number three. Green Bay was seventh. La Crosse was eighth. And even Milwaukee was 30th out of these several hundred cities. And Duluth was right up there in the top 10. Cedar Rapids was in there as well. Down in the bottom were mostly smaller communities in Texas, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Georgia.
Well, what do you think it is about cities in Wisconsin and in the Midwest that we are good at keeping our credit scores up there?
We have had a relatively stable employment. We haven't had real booms or busts in the past several years. And when you have a boom, people tend to feel richer, spend a lot of the money, and then the bust comes and they can't pay it back. We also have a fairly educated population. We have a lower cost of living here, so it's more affordable. But if you'll note, Joy, from the study, 7 of the top 10 cities in terms of their credit score in this study all are within earshot of this broadcast.
That is why.
I see causation and correlation here.
I'm with you. In fact, we have on the show talked about how important your credit score can be, and people have questions about it all the time. So how important is your credit score?
It really affects. Sometimes people will say to us, well, you know, why I'm not going to borrow any money. Why should I care about my credit score? Well, your credit score not only affects if you are going to get a loan, but at what terms you will get the loan, but it can also affect the premiums you pay on your auto insurance and your homeowner's insurance. It can affect your ability to rent an apartment, to get a cell phone contract over the long term. And many employers, about a third of large employers right now, run some form of credit screening as part of their hiring process for it. And by the time you're applying for a job and people have said, hey, you're down to the last three candidates. Now we just need to check your credit score. It's too late to fix any problems on there. So the time to look at it is right now.
Where do we find our credit scores?
There are several sources you can go to. One is annualcreditreport.com. Annualcreditreport.com gives you all the raw information about your credit situation, the history, the balances owed, how many payments you might have missed. And you can get one free report per bureau, per year at annualcreditreport.com. If you want to know your FICO score, go to myfico.com, about $20 or so. Not only do you get your credit score there, but they also have some really neat tools that say, you know what, if I pay off my credit card, what will happen to my credit score? Or if I charge up $10,000 on my card, what will happen to my score? It's very illustrative, especially if you're trying to guide a younger person into responsible credit use. You can go to the three bureaus as well and pay a small fee to get your score as well. Or there's a website called creditkarma.com, Credit Karma with a K, K-A-R-M-A, that actually gives you a credit score for free. It is advertising supported, so they try to, you know, based on your credit history, they'll probably shoot some ads to you, but they don't, you know, give your information out to people. But creditkarma.com will get you the score for free, and it's a fairly trustworthy site. We'll have links to these websites at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
Yeah, good. I'm just curious, Kevin, is the credit score, if I go to annualcreditreport.com, I'm going to get my credit score there, or I'm just going to see if I've got, you know, bad things on my credit report?
It's more about the accuracy at Annual Credit Report. They don't assemble the number for you, but it's a good thing to check it, because I think the last time I saw the numbers, about a third of credit reports had some error on there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the errors never seem to be in people's favor. They're always saying, well, you have an account that's open when you really don't. You had a payment that was late when you really don't. And so, yeah, you want to check that data again, because it takes a while to fix it. And usually when someone's asking for it, it's too late to fix it in a hurry.
All right. Well, let's say we don't like our credit score, or we'd like it to be better than that. Is there anything we can do to improve upon what we find?
It's about what you'd expect. Other than a few things, you do need to make your payments on time. That's the first and foremost. Just make the minimum payment just to keep it on schedule. But also keep the utilization low, meaning try not, if you have, so let's say, a $5,000 credit limit, try not to get more than a third of that on a rotating balance. If you've got a $5,000 limit and you're carrying $4,000 balance, that's kind of worrisome. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people say, well, I can boost my credit score up if I refinance my mortgage, take out a home equity line of credit, and pay off the credit cards. That can help, especially because it lowers your payment. However, if you're just going to go back in and charge the credit card back up again, then you're going to be in even worse shape than you were before you started.
And what if we, I don't know, open cards or close cards and that sort of thing?
That's not a great idea to do it, especially if you're doing this and we have people calling and saying, you know, I got a 30% discount at the department store by opening a credit card in their name. The 30% discount, you'd have to charge several thousand dollars on stuff to get that discount to offset the cost that you're probably getting hit by lowering your credit score by having this account open. Plus, there's extra fees and interest charges for that credit card. So it's usually not a good idea. You can consolidate the accounts. A lot of times, if you have some revolving credit card balances, the different providers will ask you, do you want to bring these over, and we'll give you 0% interest. That's, again, can be a very good idea, except if you're going to go back in and charge it up even higher. So if you're going to consolidate the accounts, pay off, and then close out the old account.
Do you have off the top of your head the ideal credit score? I mean, the healthy credit score?
Average is about 740 right now. Very good is above 800. And if it's in the high 500s or low 600s, you need to get working on it.
There we go. Kevin McKinley, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. Investors should consult with their financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. That being said, if you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234. We'll get to your calls in just a moment. Or you can also send us an email on yourmoney@wpr.org. So, Kevin, several listeners have been emailing us. They're interested in refinancing their existing mortgages, but they are concerned that the appraised value of their homes has fallen so far that it might be difficult to refinance what they have. What advice do you have for folks in this situation?
Well, I actually got a couple of these people saying, we followed your advice back in 2010 and refinanced at 5%. Now we see that mortgage interest rates are down close to 3.5% on the 30-year and around 3% for the 15-year. We want to do it again, but we found that due to the decline in the housing market, our house is not appraised at the same high value it was, mm-hmm. and especially based on what we owe. So lenders will typically give borrowers about 80% of the loan to value, meaning if you have a $200,000 home, they might give you a mortgage for $160,000. But a person in the situation might owe more than $160,000, so the bank won't provide enough for them to pay off the old mortgage. People still should consider this for several reasons, but you might need to have endure a little bit of a short-term pain for a long-term gain.
Ooh, what sort of short-term pain?
Well, you usually have to kick in some money and or you might have to pay some private mortgage insurance. You might have to kick in enough cash to get the balance down to 80% of the loan to value or pay PMI private mortgage insurance, which typically costs about $50 to $100 a month, but it also goes away once you've paid the mortgage balance down to the point where it's lower than 80% of the loan to value has been reached.
So how do you decide if putting in that extra money is worth it?
You should take the total cost of the refinance, you know, add up not only what you might have to kick in, but also the points or the closing costs, and then divide by the new payment, including your private mortgage insurance. So let's say the lender says to you, well, we'll give you the mortgage, but you have to come up with an extra $10,000 to pay down the note, closing costs, all this kind of stuff. But you're still going to save $200 per month on your payment. Take that and divide $10,000 by $200. That leaves 50 months. So if you're going to stay in the house for at least 4 years, and most people refinancing probably are, it still makes good sense to do it. And then obviously anything longer than that time period is still a better idea yet to refinance.
All right. Any other reasons why people should consider refinancing right now?
Well, as I mentioned, rates are at an all-time lows, but appraisals, while they've become more conservative, are still very high, and lenders are getting a little tighter on what they require of borrowers to get an actual loan, but they're still fairly lenient. If the situation gets better, your house rises in value, rates go down, lenders become a little more loose in their terms, you can always refinance again. But if that doesn't happen, and I quite frankly don't think it will, you'll be very glad you refinance now.
You don't think it will because you don't think interest rates are going to go down a whole lot more?
I think people's attitudes have changed about houses, and it typically takes a generation to lose that. I think people, you know, 5 years ago, people bought the biggest house they could, paid as much for it as the lender would allow them to borrow, and knew they were going to make money on it. Well, when that stopped in 2009 through 2012, people said, you know what, we're going to live a little closer to the ground now and not just chase appreciation through keep buying new and bigger homes.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. This is On Your Money. A week from today, Kevin, it is the first day of our October pledge drive, and you are going to be offering up a special mini money book.
A brand new mini money book, the wildly popular On Your Money mini money books. This one is entitled Covering College Costs. And other than retirement mortgages, the questions we get the most on Your Money concern, how do I save for college? How do I pay for college? And then how do I pay off loans I took out for college? And this mini money book will address all of those issues, tell you where to go, how to save. Many people save incorrectly for college. It ends up costing them a lot of money in taxes and need-based financial aid down the road. This mini money book, Covering College Costs, will take care of all those, answer all those questions. And the thing I really like about this, Joy, is Wisconsin Public Radio lets us give this out to people who pledge at any level. So if you have $500, wonderful. Send it to Wisconsin Public Radio. But if you have $5,
right,
please send it. We graciously accept it, and in turn and appreciation, we will send you this mini money book. So,
and that is, again, starting next week and probably online as well, as long as you're pledging for On Your Money. And we hope that you will join us. That's starting October 2nd, our October pledge drive. Again, I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. This is On Your Money. If you have a question for Kevin right now about your personal finances, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine with financial planner Kevin McKinley. 1-800-642-1234 is our number if you would like to ask Kevin a question. You can also send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. To the phones we go, and Marty in Douglas County is with us. Hi, Marty.
Good morning.
Morning.
Say, I do have a question, but I have a little cautionary tale as well. We recently were shopping for a CD, and I don't mean a musical one,
right.
A financial one.
Got
and
it.
I decided to sit down with the phone book and call every bank and credit union in the Duluth Superior area. Got widely varying interest rates from banks, and I called a bank that said, well, this is our rate, but we match anybody in the Twin Ports area except for this one credit union. I said, why don't you match this credit union? And she said, because the rates are always the highest. So guess what my next phone call
that
was.
That was helpful.
Thank you very
right.
much.
Yeah. It was a very, and I don't know if that's common for banks to match other rates, but for anyone out there shopping for a CD, it may be worth your while to take some time to call around.
That's very helpful, yeah. Marty. Thank you. And
yes.
That's very true. And it sadly, a CD for many institutions is a commodity. And so depending on the interest and the attitude of the institution on a particular given day, you might find a 0.25% to 0.5% different, especially if you're willing to go out a little longer. So, yes, that's very helpful information.
Well, so here's my question. I've had a yes and a no on this. What do you think of fixed annuities?
The tiebreaker, Kevin.
Oh, gee. Well, maybe, you know, knowing Marty's proclivity to call around, maybe she's calling every personal finance show in the country, getting an answer for this. I don't dislike them. I'm not as big a fan of them as people selling them are. Basically, what it is it's a loan to the insurance company, and that it's highly likely to be paid back and to be paid back in exactly the terms in which you started out. But the risk, of course, is that the insurance company will take your money and they have to reinvest that and try to make a profit on it. And there's a small chance that they might not make a profit on it. And if they do very poorly with it, they might put themselves in jeopardy and might not be able to pay you out. I would actually prefer that you go with the certificates of deposit instead of fixed annuities. But if you said you have plenty of CDs and you're willing to take a little more risk to get a little higher rate of return, especially if you understand the terms of the CD or of the fixed annuity rather, then I'm okay with it. But I'm not crazy about them.
Sounded like that was right down the middle, Kevin.
Right. Yeah. Thanks so much.
I waffle.
No.
My next financial advisor. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you very much. Yeah, it was that was an analysis that was reasoned analysis. Andy in Slinger is with us. Hi, Andy.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a term life insurance policy with a very reputable Milwaukee-based life insurance company.
Bob's Life Insurance, right?
And I bought a term policy when my son was born a few years ago because I was under the impression that it was the best financial idea to buy a term policy instead of a whole life policy and then invest your money, you know, in an IRA or, you know, in your retirement account and in stocks and other investments. And I've gotten some flyers from this very reputable life insurance company recently saying, hey, you can still convert your term policy into a whole life policy, and since we are so reputable, you know, this is a really good financial idea for you. And I guess I'm curious about when, if ever, if it's a good idea to convert a term policy into a whole life policy.
Well, actually, your winking reference to this very reputable company, it is actually a very reputable company, if it's the one that I think to which you are referring. But in your particular situation, I think you should skip their very generous offer to convert this policy. And the reason being, Andy, how old is your son?
He's 3.
Okay. Most people who are sold life insurance end up with some kind of cash value, whole life policy, universal life, whatever. And the problem is that because it's been a very good investment for people over the last 20, 30 years in most cases. But going forward, I don't think that many of these insurance companies, try though they might, will not earn enough to make it such a good investment over the next 20 or 30 years. Then the problem comes because the cash value life insurance is much more expensive than term. You're getting features, but you're paying for it. And I would like many people to have at least 200 to 300 times their net monthly expenses in assets left to survivors, especially if they have small children. And if you try to buy that much in cash value or whole life life insurance, you probably won't be able to afford it. But you can afford it fairly easily with term insurance, and you can schedule term to expire when hopefully your child's need for your support will expire as well. So you can take it out, say, 20 years. So I like cash value life insurance for estate tax issues, for businesses that need liquidity in case the key person passes away. But for your situation, Andy, I'd still much rather have you have term life insurance, a big, huge policy, and then have it turn out to be the biggest waste of money you ever had.
Thanks.
So, all right. Thanks, Andy, for the call. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. And if you have a question about Money Matters for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Coming up in just a bit, we'll have another installment of our series on saving for retirement. And also, we'll get some tips on saving money while shopping with coupons. That's coming up on this edition of On Your Money. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And Casey in Marinette is with us now. Hi, Casey.
Good morning.
Morning.
My question is, I went to the hospital, to the emergency room, and I was given a bill. I've got the bill in the mail, and my insurance company was debating with the hospital, I'm sure you've heard this story before, about the price. Well, in the meantime, and this has been over 4 months, my bill has went to collections because the insurance company told me not to pay the bill. They were going to work something out. My question is, how is that going to affect my credit score now that I went to a collections agency?
Yeah, Casey, I'm sorry to hear this happen. I wish I hadn't heard this before, but I've heard this hundreds of times before. It's extremely common. And the healthcare providers, and for good reason, are extremely aggressive when it happens. They go very quickly to court, and it's just an awful situation for everyone involved. They don't want to do it. They just would just as soon not have to go through this, but they do it, and they do it because they need the money. Have you contacted a lawyer yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay. If the bill is, you know, sometimes people say, well, I'd love to contact the lawyer, except the bill is, you know, $2,000. By the time I pay the lawyer, I would just be better off paying the bill. But I would contact a lawyer, and especially someone who has some experience in dealing with collections and trying to get this off. The good news is that because this is so common, this is not the kind of thing that will completely ruin your credit score for the rest of your life once it's settled. Typically, these types of settlements, after they're worked out and figured out, it's a different kind of score effect than a bankruptcy that you went through because you couldn't pay your mortgage or credit card debt that you tried to write off. It will affect it, but probably not to the great degree that would have, because the credit system realizes that a lot of people get in this situation and it's through really, you know, very little fault of your own, but it's a very natural occurrence and you have to get the care. So I would contact a lawyer and just see what the lawyer says about your different options and how to settle it. And if you can resolve it favorably, and especially with the hospital, and get it on there, you can explain it to the credit bureaus down the road to say, well, this is what happened, and hopefully they can pull it off and it won't affect your score that badly.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck to you, Casey. That's too bad. Lisa in Eau Claire is with us now. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I have a question. My husband and I are trying to save money on taxes, and we're wondering if it's a better idea, tax advantage-wise, to max out my husband's 401k program at work. He already puts in enough to get the employee match, so we're fine with that. Or should we max out our traditional IRA contributions every year?
Good for you, Lisa.
We don't have enough money to do both.
That's okay. And the fact that you're doing something at all is commendable. I would have you go to your tax returns, Lisa, and check line 43. And for married couples filing jointly in 2012, if that number is going to be higher than $70,700, then you should probably keep contributing to the pre-tax plan. If it's not, then you might want to skip it, maybe go to a Roth IRA. Otherwise, the 401k allows you not only to contribute more than what you can do to an IRA. An IRA, you can typically do $5,000 or $6,000 if you're over 50. But you also can borrow against the 401k in some cases. And that's kind of I don't recommend you do that unless it's an emergency. But it allows people to contribute more to it because you say, okay, if I do this, I can get the money back out if I run into an emergency. I don't have to worry about saving and then 2 years later saying, oh, shoot, I wish I hadn't done that. Now I need the money. And typically people don't need the money, and so they can let it grow. But otherwise, I would prefer the 401k. And also the IRA, you need to know enough and remember to make the contribution every single year. With the 401k, the contribution is pulled directly out of your husband's paycheck. You miss it, but not as much as having to write a check for $5,000 or $6,000 at, you know, by April 15th of the following year.
Sound good, Lisa?
That's true. Okay, that sounds great. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much for the call. Time now, Kevin, for our Smart Assets segment of the show. And we have been spending some time on saving for retirement through a plan at work, talking about that for the past couple of weeks. And this week you have a segment that is an all-time favorite of our listeners. Well, yeah. What is it?
Well, if we were Lynyrd Skynyrd, this is our free bird right here.
The lighters,
are in the air. That's right. It's how much you need to retire and how to tell if you are indeed on track. And there's a formula that is a good rule of thumb and a place to start anyway. Not only that, but once you figure out your own formula, it can be really motivating if you are kind of behind the game a little bit to increase your retirement savings and before it's too late.
So where do I start?
Well, first, add up your paper assets. These would be retirement accounts, IRAs, Roth IRAs, savings accounts, money that is in, you know, part of your pay-the-groceries grocery bill account. And then subtract debt, not your car and mortgage, but any credit card or student loans that you have from that. And then take that number and then calculate your typical monthly expenses. And everyone has kind of a baseline that typically in America runs about $4,000 to $5,000 per month, depending on your situation. And then take your net assets, that paper net worth that you have, and divide it by your typical monthly expenses. And the result, the factor, tells you how you're doing based on your age.
Can you give us an example of how this works?
I happen to have one right here. If, let's say you have $100,000 between your 401k, your IRAs, and your savings accounts, but you have a $10,000 credit card bill that's outstanding still. So you take the $10,000 from the $100,000, that leaves you with $90,000. And then let's say your monthly expenses, you add them all up, and that comes to about $5,000. Well, if you divide $90,000 by $5,000, that leaves you with a factor of 18. Your net worth divided by your monthly expenses leaves you with a factor of about 18.
Is 18 a good number?
It is if you're 18 years old. Other than that, you'd probably want it a little higher. Depends on how close you are to retiring. If you're in your 30s, you probably want the number to be 25. If you're in the 40s, you want it to be 50. If you're in your 50s, you probably want it to be 100. And by the time you're 60, the bad news is you need about 200 times your net monthly expenses in assets to say, hey, we can retire comfortably. The good news is you're probably going to get for sure Social Security and some type of pension payment, maybe for some people, that will help reduce your net monthly expenses, which then reduces the amount of money you need.
All right, so I need to have a bigger number because I'm not I don't have income coming.
You're still here. You're going to finish the show with us here.
Yes.
Because your number didn't
I'm trying to retire right now, right this very second. All right, I get it. So how does the retirement plan at work fit into all of this?
It does double duty because, as Lisa mentioned, if she makes her husband makes a contribution to the pre-tax retirement plan, that reduces the amount of money that they can really spend in a given month without taking it away. It's still in their names and it still can be accessed if they should. But by reducing their pay, reducing their take home, they hopefully reduce their expenses and they increase their liquid net worth by adding to savings and cutting their tax bill by using the pre-tax 401k or 403b or TSA. So in a couple of weeks, we're going to resume talking about which ones of these plans, like if I have a dollar, should it go into my IRA, my 401k, my Roth IRA, college savings, whatever, the process people can use to figure out where that next dollar should go.
Sounds good. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner. He is the managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. If you have a question, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Marie in Jefferson is with us next. Hi, Marie.
Hi. I'm on the line.
Yes, what's your question?
My question is, my husband and I have CDs, and we also, I have IRAs in annuity form, and when I have to take them out because the interest out because of my age, and the best place, safest place is to get a CD, and so that's what we've been doing, even though that we're not making much interest. So I'm wondering, is it better to, going to be 75, is it better to take it out for like 3 years or 5 years, or do you have a crystal ball to tell us if things are going to get better sooner?
Yes, I do. Actually, I was given one when we started the show as a gift, and it's really come in handy. I've never been wrong. I'm often early. but never wrong. Marie, you should your question is a good one, and you should look at CDs based on one factor, and that is, what is the substantial penalty for early withdrawal? So if you're looking at a five-year CD, let's say, and they say you're going to get 2% on it, that's actually a fairly competitive rate in these markets. The thing I would really pay attention to is say, what if I need to pull this money out early? What's the penalty? And usually, hopefully, they'll say maybe 6 months of interest, or maybe in a extreme case, a year's worth of interest. That's still okay, because that caps how much you can lose on that if you need the money to spend, or more likely, if interest rates go up and you want to pull it out and take it to another institution to get a higher interest rate. So as long as the penalty is 6 months to a year, I would go out as long as you possibly can, because you're going to lock in a higher rate than what you could get if you just keep rolling 6 month and 1 year CDs over and over again.
Okay. Thank you. That helped.
Thank you very much, Marie.
We actually helped someone.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, that's
now
wonderful.
We can go home.
And didn't Marie sound like she was a whippersnapper?
That was the youngest 75-year-old person I've ever heard in my life.
Marie, you have a very young-sounding voice. Thank you for calling. Mike in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Mike.
Hello, how are you today?
Very good. What is your question?
Well, basically, it's kind of a comment question. I worked very briefly for an insurance company that was selling strictly universal life, and what they were trying to get me to do, I'm kind of a financial guy, I understand how investing works and such, and they're basically trying to get me to talk people into cashing in their IRAs, cashing in their 401ks, and taking all of that money that they were putting into it monthly and then adding on to it as well to buy their form of universal life. I was kind of under the impression that wasn't a good idea, and I didn't think that would be ethical for me to, you know, tell somebody that, you know, their investment form is a bad idea, mine's much better, when I already kind of know it isn't. But am I on the right lines there? Is that kind of a bad idea?
Yeah, based on what you told me, Mike, I agree with you completely, and better off you can look yourself in the mirror and know that you did the right thing. It's unfortunate that you know, many financial services providers now have broadened their offering so that no matter what a person's situation is, they can figure out what the best solution is for that person. Some of them still are running around with hammers and see every financial question as a nail. And many times it's not a nail, it's a fingernail. And this is a case where cash value or universal life insurance does have a place in some people's arsenal of investment tools, but this is not one of those cases, and it certainly isn't something people should cash out of their retirement to do. So I, based on what you told me, Mike, I agree with your take on it.
Thank you very much, Mike, for calling. I'm Joy Cardine with financial planner Kevin McKinley, and this is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Greenback paper bill. Yes, just a little piece of paper coated with chlorophyll.
This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. And if you have a personal finance question, time for you at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin, September is National Coupon Month, and I know that you wanted to give us some tips on how we can spend less by using a rapidly changing method. What's this?
Well, you know, I am not a lawyer and I am not a journalist, but I believe in adhering to good journalist principles, which is that you have to run a story from every gimmick, month, week, day, whatever that every single PR agency puts out. And I think Edward R. Murrow would be very proud of me right now.
Yeah, who decided it was National Coupon Month, I wonder?
It's PMA something, Promotional Marketing Association or whatever, that's National Coupon Month. The coupon just celebrated its 125th birthday. It was originally traced back to 1887 when the chemist, if you will, who came up with the formula for Coca-Cola wanted people to try out, so it gave out a coupon for free Cokes to people. Americans now use about $4 billion a year worth of coupons, and 96% of coupon users say even if they win the lottery, they would still use coupons.
Really?
And I'm willing to bet I know a lot of On Your Money listeners who are financially independent, who still like a deal and will take that little scrap of paper in if it's going to save them a quarter for it. There's also that extreme couponing TV show that on TLC, right, where they, you know, bring $1,800 worth of groceries in and actually get, you know, a check back for $1.15 at the register. But with all promotional items, you do need to watch out and be very careful that you don't end up paying more than you would if you hadn't used the coupons at all.
Right. I know I have used coupons in the past, and I still will use them if they are, you know, a dollar off an item that I always buy anyway. Mm-hmm. But the ones that bug me is when you can get 25 cents off if you buy five of these items or something. It's like, really? So what tips do you have to get the most out of coupons?
A lot of stores now actually have the in-store flyer. You definitely want to pick that up. And what they will do is they don't even bother with having to have to go through the store and cut everyone out. They just scan a code into the flyer, and you get if you bought anything in the flyer, you get the actual coupon for it. And if you don't already, you may want to subscribe to the Sunday newspaper, because they have a ton of flyers for local stores, coupons, etc. And I've noticed they still have articles of news
sometimes,
and interest in sometimes of these papers too. If you have a particular product or a store that you buy a lot of, or you go to the store a lot, friend them on Facebook, follow them on Twitter, sign up for the email newsletter, whatever, because they'll put a lot of specials in for those people who subscribe to through those methods. And in the coupons, if you're buying something that's more expensive, Google the product or the name of the store and the words promo code, because a lot of online retailers have codes that you can use to type in, and they'll either put them up themselves or other people will put the promo code up. And we've given out, you know, promo codes for 50% off pizzas at the chain store, and they work. And and a lot of times it's because the stores want people to come in and try the product. You can also go to woot.com, W-O-O-T, woot.com, one of our favorite deal websites, and they have several different components on their site where people can put these coupon codes as well. Just make sure that if you're buying this stuff, make sure they're non-perishables, and if it's perishable, that you can use it or freeze it in a hurry. Otherwise, again, you end up throwing it out, and it's not that good of a deal.
Yeah. You have just some advice on what we should watch out for in terms of couponing?
Well, of course, don't buy something you're not going to buy anyway, you know, lemon-flavored cigarettes or something like that that they're promoting, but not something you're going to use on a regular basis.
What?
Also,
lemon-flavored cigarettes.
That's
right.
An old story in our family about my father-in-law buying some lemon-flavored cigarettes.
Because he had a coupon.
Because they're on sale, and they said, Dad, you don't smoke, and he said, they're on sale.
That's right.
I'm just going to buy these. Do the math. Figure out if you're getting any real savings on this, especially compared to other products that are priced normally without the coupon. And then watch the tape and the checkout to make sure you get the credit. The Journal Sentinel and the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection reported recently that in Wisconsin, about 2.8% of items are scanned incorrectly. And it never seems to be an error in the shopper's favor. But that's pretty good. It's down from previous years, but it's still something you have to watch to make sure you actually get the credit. And if you have a little notebook with you while you're going through the stores, write down any remarkable bargains, and then you can check it there, or add up the math later while you're in the car, go back in, and the stores will give you a refund. They're pretty good about trying to keep goodwill and make sure that they keep the customer happy.
So Kevin, are you a you know, an extreme couponer where you can have the three cartfuls and then get paid back money at the after you check out?
I'm embarrassed at how happy it makes me to look at that tape when they say you save 36% on this. I it's one of my few thrills in life. I really enjoy that. But no, I'm not the super couponer, and I've seen the show where these people that just are diligent about clipping the coupons and making sure they get it, and I wondered what happened. So we did some research on it. A woman named Jill Caltato at jillcaltato.com dove into this, and she's this coupon super coupon queen, and she figured out that she actually watched a show, you know, like the Zapruder film frame by frame see the UPC codes as they were going through, and she figured out that what these people are doing, the buyer is actually completely abusing the coupons, putting coupons in there that don't even apply to products she purchased. They're photocopies, they're double coupons that aren't supposed to be used. And then you say, well, why would the store allow her to do that? What's great publicity for the store? They give away, you know, $400 of free products, and their sign is up, and people get the notion that this store, has great bargains and you can get food for free there. So they're disappointed, of course, when they go in with their coupons and the store says, no, see at the bottom, it says you can't do this. And they say, well, I saw it on Super Coupon. And they said, I'm sorry, you see the terms, you can't do this. So it's kind of, this is going to come as a shock to many people who enjoy reality TV, but sometimes there's not a whole lot of reality there.
It's a fraud. But some people can save quite a bit of money.
Absolutely.
If they really put their minds to
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Especially people are stay-at-home parents, and you're trying to support a family and feed kids and everything. It can make a big difference in food prices, and prices at the grocery store seem to be going up every single week, and that's a good way to save some money.
Well, we will take more calls for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Fred in Albany is with us now. Hi, Fred.
Hi.
Yes, what's your question?
Oh, yeah, I had a question on if I should refinance my home, because right now I'm paying more on my principal than I would if I refinanced and I'm retired.
Mm-hmm. So you're making a payment that's larger than required. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Do you, Fred? Do you have plenty of cash on hand where you don't want for anything, and you really say, "Gosh, I have nothing to do with this. CD rates are low, so I might as well just keep paying this thing down."
No, I don't.
Okay, then I would definitely not only refinance, but I would stop making that extra payment. It feels good to be paying that off. And Fred, were you by any chance raised on a farm?
Oh, no.
Okay. Were you raised by people who were raised on a farm?
No.
Okay. Were you raised by people who were raised by people who were raised by people who were raised on a farm?
No.
Fred might be the exception to your rule, Kevin.
Fred is one of the urban non-agricultural people. Usually, Fred, there's a genetic strain that runs through people who were raised by people who were raised by people on a farm.
My parents were from Germany.
Okay.
I was born over there, and my dad, it was always work, work, work.
Right. Save, save, save.
Yeah.
And he didn't say call a radio show. He didn't say refinance your mortgage at whatever possible and keep that debt outstanding as long as you possibly can, did he?
No.
Well, that's what I'm going to tell you to do. I don't mean to, no disrespect to your father, but in your situation, if cash is a little tight, if you can go back and refinance, you should strongly consider it. And even if you can't or you don't want to do it, at least stop paying the mortgage and build up your cash until you get about a year's worth of living expenses. And then if there's nothing else you can do with the money, there's no other need you have, then go back to start paying it off. But otherwise, I just assume you have you make the minimum possible payment. And it's actually safer to do that than it is to retire the debt, but then not have any cash on hand.
Yeah, because what I get from my retirement, I mean, it's by the middle of the month, I'm out of money.
Yeah, you're doing the thing that many of us were taught to do, Fred. But it's actually more dangerous to do what you're doing than it is to just slow down the payments. The interest in this environment is not going to be what hurts people. It's usually cash flow or lack thereof. So I'd just as soon have you slow down, keep that money in the bank, and then if something comes up, you can pay for it. But in the meantime, you can stay in your house for 30 days, and all you have to do is make that minimum payment. So please keep doing that,
Fred. Thanks for the call. Good luck. Glenn in Reedsburg is with us now. Hello, Glenn.
Well, good morning, and thanks for taking my call, Joy and Kevin. My question is, when my parents passed away some time ago, they left a small inheritance to each of my children, and at that point, we put that into an UGMA account, thinking that was a good idea. I'm now kind of having second thoughts because that becomes immediately available to them when they reach the age of 21. And also it has a huge effect on whether or not they're eligible for financial aid as they go to college. So my general question is, what advice do you have for that money in the UGMA account? Are there some other options out there? And my specific question is, have you heard of a KISS trust?
KISS trust, is that some type of legal mechanism sponsored by the great costume rock band?
Yeah.
I'm glad I know they're branching out. They're big in merchandising. There's the, you know, KISS keychains and KISS coffins, and now they're in trust. Or where did you hear about this?
Yeah, I heard on it. Heard about it on the internet, and it is an irrevocable trust that allows you to, you know, to put this in a wrapper where you can define the age at which it becomes available, and it kind of removes it from that pool of money that they consider when they're calculating financial aid.
It probably can be done. The question is, should it be done? And I'm guessing with the cost to do it, even if it is kind of a prepackaged arrangement, I'm guessing that the cost and the hassle of doing that probably not going to save you a lot of benefit. How old are your kids, Glenn?
Well, actually, I'm procrastinating to the last moment. My daughter turns 21 in November.
Okay. Well, you are correct in several things. That technically is their money. And when they reach the age of majority, they technically can do whatever they want. Most kids are smart enough to say, if I waste this money, it's unlikely that I'll see any more of it in the future. So I'm just going to leave it up to my parents to tell me what to do with it. And in terms of financial aid, yes, money in the kid's name does count more heavily on need-based financial aid. But most financial aid is actually loans, and very little of it is need-based. You know, where they just say, well, here's a bunch of grants and scholarships that we just had lying around. So that is a risk. What I'd rather have you do is just spend that as quickly as possible and spend it on something that is in her benefit, whether it is tuition, a car, braces, a computer for school, band camp, sports camps, whatever have you, then you can deplete that money more quickly, and you have to spend it in her interest. One of the concerns I have with any type of trust arrangement is, if she wants to, she could argue, well, this is my money, you were supposed to spend it in my interest, but you locked it up against my wishes for several years. That's not really in my interest, and I'd like that. So unless it's a huge amount of money that will just really damage her, it's enough money to cause problems, I'd rather have you just spend it. Is she working, your 21-year-old daughter, Glenn?
She, of course, has summer jobs, you know,
okay.
Between.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you use the money to put it into a Roth IRA for her? That'll help shield it from some of the financial aid consequences, and she can get the money out if she needs it, but it's a little more compartmentalized, if you will, than just sitting in a bank account or a mutual fund.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks a lot.
All right,
very
Glenn.
Helpful.
Thanks very much for the call. Well, we have time for the website of the week now, Kevin.
Yeah, coupons.com. We talked a lot about it, but coupons.com allows you to go through, click on many major name brand products that you're probably buying already, save, print it out, save a bunch of money, coupons.com, and we'll have a link to that website at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
And next week, again, we start our October pledge drive, and we have a special mini money book.
Yes, covering college costs. And as all of the On Your Money pledge drives, we're not just going to sit and talk about the tote bags and how awesome we are at public radio. We're going to give you some real information that you can use during the show, but any pledger at any amount gets a free copy of the On Your Money mini money book covering college costs.
That's next week on Your Money. Four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Thank you. Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money LLC. Thanks very much to Bill Martins and to Amanda Magnus for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. Also coming up tomorrow at this time, the millennial generation trusts the media even less than the rest of us. I'll be talking with the author of Millennials, New and Social Media, tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.